We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Hey everyone, it's Kona here. I just wanted to pop in before we start this episode because after it was released, I got an email from a listener that I thought was really interesting. Now, we always strive to do the best that we can in terms of sensitivity and language and things like that. And it turns out that we did get a few things wrong here. In this episode, we refer to Alicia Navarro as high functioning. Now, this was a descriptor that had been used in a lot of the news articles that I read. And because this case was so recent, it didn't occur to me to really think about that language and whether or not it was up to date. Turns out it's not. As our listener Kennedy said, Quote, the distinction between high functioning and low functioning is really just whether or not the person is verbal or nonverbal, and the functioning label is more of a value judgment. So verbal slash nonverbal is a better way to describe autistic people. And that makes complete sense to me. So that's number one. And number two is we briefly mentioned Asperger's syndrome, which actually is not an official diagnosis anymore. The scientist who it was named after actually has some like creepy Nazi ties as well. It's a whole thing. But the point is that Asperger's is no longer a diagnosis. So we aren't using it. So I do apologize for that. I just wanted to clear that up because, you know, you may not have known either. And I think learning things is fun. But for now, let's get into this week's episode about the disappearance of Alicia Navarro.
Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
I ran away. I will be back. I swear. I'm sorry. Jessica Nunez awoke on the morning of September 15th, 2019, and found that note in her daughter Alicia's room. Alicia Navarro's 15th birthday was only 5 days away, but she was gone. Alicia wasn't the type of kid to run away. She had social anxiety and liked to keep her inner circle closed. So who could have convinced her to leave her Glendale, Arizona home in the middle of the night? Jessica fears that the answers surrounding her daughter's disappearance may lie in her daughter's secret online activities. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Alicia Navarro. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. Alicia Navarro's case is one of the more well-known cases out there that we've covered, but, you know, like everything that we do on this show, I feel that it's still very important. And I also have to remember that just because I may be familiar with someone's story doesn't mean that it's actually like widely known. I'm sure you have no idea.
Shockingly, no. Yeah. I have not heard of this story at all.
Yeah. And the reason why I know about it is because some big name podcasts have covered it. But, you know, that's, you've probably never heard it.
Nope.
You know, also, I read something online when I was researching this from a woman who says that she lives in the same area of Arizona, like a few miles away from Alicia, and she had never heard about this case. She only found out about it recently when Kendall Ray, who's a huge true crime YouTuber, covered it on her channel.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, if somebody who lives there
that close, right?
Yeah. Doesn't know about it, then I feel like it's certainly, you know, important.
Worth retelling.
Right. Absolutely. Exactly. Jessica Nunez, Alicia's mother, is also still out there tirelessly fighting for her daughter's story to get more coverage because she absolutely believes that Alicia is out there alive and hopes that someone will recognize her and give her the tip that they need to bring her daughter home. So before we get into this week's episode, we do have a few more people who have joined us over on Patreon. This was the week of Sarah's. So thank you very much to Sarah A and Sarah M.
Okay, neither of which are my first ex-wife. So we're good there.
Well, both of these don't have an H at the end.
Okay, so definitely not my ex-wife.
Okay, well, that's probably good. We've got one of your ex-wives on our Patreon, though, so...
Yes.
Shout out
but,
to her.
But not the first one.
So if you would like to be one of Ethan's ex-wives and join us over on Patreon... No? Is that not what we're doing?
No, the Patreon, yes. not an ex-wife.
We're not interviewing for more?
No.
Okay.
No, you're it.
Okay. Wait, what?
Three strikes and I'm out.
Anyway, yeah, Patreon, do it. It's great. You can get these episodes early and ad-free, along with, allegedly, Ethan's show about mental health.
Who knows? We'll see.
Allegedly. All right. So right now we are going to stop talking about all of that and get to the story of Alicia Navarro. Alicia Christian Navarro was born on September 20th, 2004, to Jessica Nunez. Alicia's birth father is said to live either in Florida or Cuba, but had not been a part of her life. Alicia lived with her mother, stepfather, and two siblings in Glendale, Arizona. Jessica says that Alicia has always been a very loving child and was incredibly smart. Early in her childhood, Alicia was diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum, but she's very high functioning.
So are we talking Asperger's or even higher functioning than that?
I don't know specifically.
Okay.
Just that she's high functioning, but very smart, but yes, on the spectrum. In addition to being on the autism spectrum, Alicia did deal with anxiety, specifically social anxiety. She very much liked to stick to a routine and would sometimes have trouble deviating from it. Alicia was taking medication to treat her anxiety, but, you know, that certainly didn't cure it. And Jessica said that when her daughter was feeling particularly anxious about going somewhere, she would sometimes go so far as to curl up into a ball on her floor and start screaming.
That's also common for people on the spectrum, too. So, you know, even if she was just barely on the spectrum, but also suffered from anxiety,
right, like
that would be pretty common.
Yeah, exactly. And so not only that, but Jessica said that Alicia had also been known to self-harm in an attempt to soothe herself. So because of this, Alicia preferred to spend the majority of her time at home. Now, this didn't mean, though, that she didn't have friends. Alicia did have a small group of friends whom she had known since kindergarten, and she had also begun to make friends at her new school. Despite excelling academically, Alicia had previously had issues at school. And now, I couldn't find a lot of details on this, but it seemed as though she had trouble finding something that was a good overall fit. And as a result, she ended up switching schools several times, even trying online school for a while. In 2019, though, shortly before her disappearance, Alicia began attending Borgata Catholic School, which seemed to be a positive change for her. So again, we're talking about, this is all happening in mid-September. So like the school year had just started. So this Catholic school is very new for her. And, you know, she was a freshman.
Well, that's interesting. So I wonder if it worked for her because of, I'm assuming it's a Catholic school. It's like mm-hmm. rigid in structure.
Yeah, and right. That could be it because, like, you know, one of the photos that's circulating is her school photo and they wore uniforms.
Right. So that's something that she would have less anxiety about.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if that is what it was, but it did seem to be positive for her. She had begun making friends and may even had a boyfriend or two.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, a lot of this background information on Alicia is coming from journalist Alyssa Fleck, who has interviewed Jessica multiple times for her blog, Crime Scoop.
Fleck, F-L-E-C-K?
E-C-K, yeah, not Fleck.
Yeah.
Yeah. The relationships that Alicia may have been involved in were just part of several noticeable changes that Alicia had been experiencing in the months leading up to her disappearance. I mentioned before that she was a shy and timid person and she liked to stick to her routine. Well, part of that routine involved the way she dressed. She wasn't into flashy clothes and there was this one sweatshirt that she preferred to wear almost every day, despite the fact that she lived in Arizona and it could just be demonically hot there. But a few weeks before her disappearance, she asked her mother to buy her an open-backed shirt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a big change.
And that's what Jessica thought. You know, she thought this wasn't really Alicia's style, but she wanted to support her daughter trying new things.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a big step.
Exactly. And so, like, it's one of those things where had, you know, Alicia not been on the spectrum and not, you know, had these things where she, like, only wanted to wear one shirt, you know, whatever, Jessica
that detail would have, like, passed her mom's butt. Right?
I think it actually, I don't think it would have, because I think that in general, her mom would have been like, you're 14. I'm not buying you an open back shirt.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think at that point she was just like happy that Alicia was kind of exploring new things and maybe breaking out of her shell a little bit and like just willing to try
something new.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So that's why, you know, and I think that's important to have Jessica's mindset during this, because there were several things that Alicia was kind of doing differently and, you know, that Jessica was supporting, I think, for the same reason. For instance, Alicia also started expressing interest in makeup around this time. And so, like, Jessica took her to the MAC store, which, by the way, I mean, you know, you don't know. Like, MAC is, like, expensive, like, fancy makeup. Like,
oh, is that, yeah. Like, is that, like, Ulta? Or
no, it's, like, above. Well, I mean, I think you can buy MAC products at Ulta, but, like, MAC is makeup brand.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so the point is she was, like, buying her, like, nice, expensive makeup. She wasn't, like, just going to CVS and buying her Wet n Wild or, you know, like, whatever. I know that you're just looking at me blankly. It doesn't matter. Other people listening understand. It's fine.
Makeup. Yeah. That's all I heard.
Alicia was a freshman in high school. She's 14, almost 15. Like, makeup is a totally normal thing at that age, right? And so, like, part of it was just that. Like, part of it was like, okay, my teenager's getting into makeup.
She's also trying new things.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, yeah, it was a big deal. Now, in terms of food, Alicia would really only eat things like chicken nuggets and French fries, preferably from IHOP or McDonald's. And I know you're like looking at our kids, but it's not the same. I mean, it is. Again, people on the spectrum often do have very, like, a lot of sensitivities regarding food and textures and things like that.
Yeah.
And so for her, like, she was very rigid about what she would eat. So for her upcoming birthday, though, Alicia told Jessica that she wanted to go out for a fancy steak dinner and have red velvet cupcakes.
That is quite a departure.
Well, exactly.
On many levels. You're talking about texture. I mean, going from chicken nuggets and fries to a steak.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And so, again, Jessica was thrilled that she was exploring new things. So she's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, we will definitely do that for your birthday. And keep in mind, too, so they are an Hispanic family. This was Alicia's 15th birthday. That's her quinceañera.
Right.
That is huge.
Right.
That is a huge birthday. And typically, this is a giant, elaborate celebration. But Alicia had already been like, listen, that's not...
Well, it can't happen. I mean...
Yeah. She's like, I'm not into that. Like, we are not doing, like, a full quinceañera. We are not having, like, you know, a court of, like, 10 girls, 10 boys. Like,
yeah, and she would have to wear a dress.
Exactly, and, yeah.
Like, all the attention would be on her.
Right.
Like, yeah, no way.
Yeah, so they had already planned on just doing, like, a much lower key event. So I think the fact, again, that she just, like, wanted to go out to a fancy dinner really was exciting for Jessica. Up to this point, Alicia's social life was primarily online. Now, it wasn't because she couldn't make friends. She was just more comfortable interacting with people in that way. And Jessica understood this about her daughter, so she was generally fine with Alicia staying up late gaming and chatting on Discord and through other online platforms. Now, that's not to say there weren't some problems with this arrangement. Once, Jessica caught Alicia giving personal details to a stranger online. Another time, she found texts that were to someone who seemed considerably older than her daughter. They concerned Jessica so much that she even filed an incident report with the police. Now, I don't know exactly when these incidents took place, but I don't think they happened super close to when Alicia disappeared. I think these kind of happened like a little while before.
Sure.
So let's get back to the month or so leading up to September 15th, 2019. Alicia really seemed as though she was blossoming. Jessica didn't know if it was the new school or the fact that Alicia was about to turn 15, but at the time, she generally saw the changes as being positive. Alicia even started wearing body spray, like a scented body spray, something that she never thought she would do because she was very sensitive to strong smells. Shortly before her disappearance, Alicia even asked her mom to drop her off at the mall so she could hang out with a few friends from school.
That's, to me, a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Social issues are like, that's a huge deal for somebody that's on the spectrum.
You know,
being able to physically and socially interact with people and establish those, like, quote unquote, normal relationships, that's a huge, huge deal. It's a step in a very positive direction.
Right. And these were two boys who went to her new school. So these were like, weren't people she'd been friends with for years or anything like that. Like, these were new friends.
Yeah.
And now, I don't think either one of them was one of the people that she had allegedly been in a relationship with. Like I mentioned a little bit ago that she had maybe had some boyfriends at school. I don't think either one of them, you know, like were these guys. I got this from that reporter, Alyssa Flex, blog. And so she gave them pseudonyms because they're minors.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'll just use the same pseudonyms that she used. So she calls them Jack and Cody. Now, Jack was a junior at Alicia's school, and he was trying to get her to join the school's robotics team because Alicia knew how to code.
Oh.
Yeah. And she was like really good at it. So he was like, hey, you need to, you know, come join the robotics team with me. Now, at this mall trip, apparently they met up with another boy who was a friend of Cody's. I don't know if he went to their school or not, but afterwards, Alicia apparently gushed to her mother about this boy and, you know, thought he was like super cute and like definitely had a crush. Now, Alicia and her mom were very close. And so this is something that like she would talk to her mom about. Again, I bring this up because, you know, it's important to know that like Alicia was at a point in her life where she was interested in boys. Like that is just kind of, you know, where her mind was at. Not all the time necessarily, but sometimes for sure.
Sure. It's typical teenage.
Yeah. Again, freshman high school. Like this is what it is, you know? Now, interestingly, Jack later told police that Alicia had had a burner phone in her backpack that day at the mall. But Jessica says that Alicia didn't even have a backpack when she dropped her off.
Huh. That's an interesting bit of information there.
Yeah. So at this point, Alicia is clearly going through a lot of changes in her life, but most of them seem like they're positive. However, there were some more that were certainly more worrisome. Shortly after the mall trip, Jessica noticed a golf ball-sized hole in Alicia's window screen. So Alicia said that a bird did it, which I totally buy because we have a screen in our living room that the birds have just absolutely massacred.
Sure, but they haven't put a hole in it the size of a golf ball.
I don't, I mean, they've really torn that thing apart. I stare at it a lot. I work from home. However, Jessica's husband pointed out to her that the hole was clearly made from the inside, meaning that the pieces of screen were poking out.
Okay.
So after everything that happened, Jessica now wonders if Alicia had made the hole herself in order to pass notes to someone.
Creepy on many levels.
Well, okay, so I find it interesting. And my first instinct when I read it was to agree with this theory because I was 15 in the 90s. And that's absolutely something that we would have done.
Pass notes to somebody standing outside of your house through a screen?
Yeah. No, that was something that we would have done. I think we actually, my friend Jesse and I actually did do that. But this was 2019 and Alicia had an iPhone, a laptop, and a gaming computer. And yes, while her mother did seem to spot check her devices, it doesn't seem like she had Alicia's passwords or regularly checked on who she was texting or what she was saying. Plus, Alicia's bedroom was on the second floor. So while she could certainly drop a note out through the hole in the screen, there wouldn't really be a good way for anyone to pass a note back to her. So I actually don't know if the hole really means anything. I think it might be just a red herring.
I'm still hung up on you passing notes in the 90s through the screen in your window. Like you, I feel like you and I lived very different lives.
We did live very different lives. I think we've well established that.
Like, if somebody came over to my house and I wanted to talk to them, I'd just open the door and go and talk to them. Even with as strict of a mother as I had. Like, if somebody was there, yeah, I totally would have just, like, gone outside and talked to them.
Yeah, I know. We're different people. So after Alicia disappeared, Jessica and police, of course, spoke with her friends. One online friend they were able to track down was a 20-year-old man named Clark Samples who lives in Oregon. Now, we, of course, do not love a 20-year-old man who is friends on Discord with a 14-year-old girl.
Very big red flag there.
Yes.
Not good.
No, but what I will say about Clark is that he has seemingly been incredibly helpful with the investigation. He gave his devices over to the FBI to analyze, and he's been talking to the family and reporters and just like basically, you know, telling them everything that he knows.
Okay. Did it start off with, I understand that this is an inappropriate relationship?
I don't know. I mean, I was not present for the interviews.
Maybe we rewind and start with that.
Yeah, yes. So what he did say is that Alicia had a habit when they were talking of weaving together truth and fiction. So he was never really sure what parts of the things she told him were true or not. For instance, she told him that she had learned electric guitar and was going to be in a band with Clark, which was one of those friends she went to the mall with. But that doesn't necessarily seem to have been true. She also told him that she sold her Xbox and had a boyfriend. So again, I don't know if she sold the Xbox. The boyfriend thing, that seems like it was kind of true. Like, I don't know. It's just kind of up in the air. But he also later said that he and like some of their other kind of Discord friends had been working on trying to build her confidence so that she would like be more comfortable interacting with people at school and like and things like that, as opposed to just interacting with people online, because she was very shy. So at the beginning of this school year, the 2019 school year, I don't know if it was like a project or what, but she had to make a collage of like words that described her or something. And so she like, you know, cut out words from magazines and things like that. And two of the words that she used were nerdy and introverted. So, you know, like, yeah, that's normal. But again, like, I think that her online friends are kind of trying to help her with that. Like, she seemingly was trying to kind of break out of that a little bit. Again, it just seems like a time of really big changes for her.
Still not okay with somebody 20 years old.
I know. Yeah.
Talking to her, though.
It's not great.
But I put that blame on the 20-year-old.
Well, yeah, not her, of course.
No, not at all.
No.
And I just want to make sure that it didn't, that I didn't come across as sounding like I'm victim blaming,
right?
Because I'm not. That solely relies on the 20-year-old. Of course, I don't even know what Discord is. I don't know anything about it, shockingly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sorry, online or not, if you're a 20-year-old dude and a 14-year-old girl is talking to you and you know she's 14, it's probably time to end the conversation.
Yeah, I would agree.
Friendly or otherwise. Sorry.
And at first, when I was writing this, I was like, well, maybe he didn't know. But then I was like, no, because they were like legitimately friends. Like,
and helping she wasn't her with her school.
Exactly.
Projects.
Like, she, no, not with her school projects, just like with just her general like life. But I mean, again, like, she wasn't trying to portray herself, even though she like maybe said some things that weren't true. She wasn't like, oh, yes, I'm this like college student in New York. And, you know, she wasn't like portraying herself as somebody she completely wasn't. You know, I think she was portraying herself as a high school kid in Arizona, like she was. And, you know, maybe, but they both had like the same games, and that's how they ended up on Discord together. But yes, agreed. 20-year-olds don't talk to 14-year-olds. So as I mentioned, the boyfriend thing, you know, it could have been true. So she may have even been in two overlapping relationships that apparently both ended badly. And I find this really interesting because, like, from somebody to go from, like, having a very small, like, in-person social circle to, like, have them join a new school to then suddenly within a month or, like, 3 weeks or however long they had even been in school at that point, having not one but two relationships seems extremely difficult to me. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure something like that would have been easy for you as a 14-year-old, but like...
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because when I was 14 and starting high school, I was in a new high school.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, you moved.
That's when I moved from the farm and with my dad. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I definitely struggled for a little bit.
How long did it take you to have two girlfriends?
Like at the same time?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
I mean... I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. But no, like it was definitely a struggle to like find my group of friends and you know, just start my own social circles. And so I can't imagine how difficult that would have been for her. To your point, yes, that is a big leap.
Right. Yeah, no, I think so too. I think it is a big leap. And yeah, I would love to know more about that, but unfortunately, we don't have a lot of details on it. But, you know, in any case, again, and I do think that to an extent, at least, I don't know how much she knew or she knew the whole story, I do think that Jessica was aware of some of this, because on Friday, September 13th, which was the Friday before she went missing, Alicia actually asked her mother if she could stay home from school. And Jessica said yes. And she actually thought that it might have had something to do with like anxiety over these breakups and stuff. And like maybe she didn't want to like go to school and like deal with people. She just needed a break, you know, whatever, like mental health day. And Jessica said, fine. Because again, Alicia was a good student. So she's like, you know what? You can miss a day. Like you'll live. So the day before this, on Thursday, September 12th, Alicia allegedly told her friend Jack, which was one of the mall kids, that she was planning to run away to California and even invited him to come along with her. But like, it wasn't something that he took seriously at all. Like a lot of people, I feel like say like, oh yeah, I'm going to run away to California. Like, let's go. It'll be fun. You know, but it wasn't something that she had been talking about long term. It didn't seem like she had like a plan. It just, you know, just seemed like something people say. And so he didn't like tell anyone about it or anything like that. He just.
No, but I'm sure in hindsight, you know, after she went missing.
Of course. Yeah. No,
it became an issue.
Of course. Yeah. As soon as she went missing, he was like, oh, also, you know, we had this weird conversation.
Did she say that? Did she happen to tell him that she was going to California with somebody or. I know you said that it sounded like she didn't really have any plans. I'm just wondering if she mentioned that she was going with someone.
It doesn't seem like it, but again, I like no other details have been publicly released about that, so I don't know for sure, but I don't believe so. Again, I feel like if it had been more specific, he would have taken it seriously, and it is just something that he doesn't seem to have taken seriously until she actually did go missing. And then he, of course, did tell people about it. All right. So this is the timeline. Thursday, she talks about running away. Friday, she stays home from school. Saturday, she also spends at home. And she spent the majority of the day in her room, which, you know, was pretty normal behavior for her. She had some interactions with her family, but not much. The official timeline published in the Glendale Daily Planet says that she didn't have any interactions with friends that day. And now I take that to mean any known friends.
Right, or physical friends.
Exactly. Or even like Clark, you know, the people online that they found out about.
Yeah.
Like when they interviewed them, they're like, yeah, we did not talk to her on Saturday. But we don't actually know who she may have been talking to online that day. It was also normal for Alicia to stay up super late gaming. I don't know what time Jessica usually went to bed on the weekends, but she was up late on the night of September 14th, waiting for her husband to get off of work. Around 1 a.m., Alicia came downstairs and seemed surprised that her mother was still awake. So Alicia got a glass of water and, you know, asked Jessica why she was still up. Alicia ended up going back up to her room, and that was the last time that Jessica saw her daughter.
At 1 a.m.
Yeah. So at some point after that, Alicia's stepdad came home from work. Jessica ended up going to bed. I read in one source that she ended up like going into her other kid's room and like falling asleep with them, and that her stepdad ended up falling asleep on the couch watching TV. So like basically, it's basically our house anytime that you work late. Like I fall asleep and then you like also pass out on the couch watching TV.
Well, so if that's the setup, you would think that it would be difficult for her to sneak out.
So yeah, so keep that in mind. Alicia's last online activity was a little bit before 3:30 a.m. So they know she was in the home until then.
Okay, so I was waiting to get to this.
Right.
They have her computers. Yes. They searched.
They have her computer singular. So I'm going to get to what she took with her.
Okay.
But she had two computers. She had a MacBook Air and she had a gaming computer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The next morning around 7 a.m., Jessica was making breakfast and noticed that their back door was ajar. Now, she assumed that her husband had left it open, but when she asked him about it, he said that he hadn't gone into the backyard at all. This was early. It was 7 a.m., and she knew Alicia was up late, so she assumed that she was just still sleeping. But at that moment, Jessica felt that something was wrong. So she went up to her daughter's room, but it was empty.
So at this point, Alicia has a 3.5 hour head start from the last known.
Exactly. So sighting. They know that Alicia left the home sometime between 3:30 and 7 a.m.
And she went out the back door. What's the backyard like? Do we know? Is it?
Yeah, we're getting to that.
Okay.
So Jessica and her husband went out to the backyard and saw signs that Alicia had gone out that way. Their backyard wasn't fenced in with like a wooden fence, as you may be kind of assuming. It was actually a cinder block wall around the sides, and then they had a gate. At this point, it's important to mention that Alicia was incredibly tiny. At the time of her disappearance, most of her missing posters have her at 4'5" and 89 pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah.
At 14?
Yeah. Almost 15. I did see one poster that had her at 4'9", but even so, that's very small for a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she definitely looked younger than she was.
Okay, but you said there was a gate in the backyard.
Right. So, okay, so let me explain this. So in order for her to get out, she had to go over the cinder block wall first. And the cinder block wall, I'm thinking, was like 6 feet. So what she did was she took two lawn chairs, stacked them on top of each other, and climbed over that way. Now, then there was a second gate that she went over. And Jessica said that that gate was actually unlocked, but Alicia went over it instead of opening it because she thinks that opening it would have made too much noise and it would have awoken their dog and or her husband. So she actually stacked some cinder blocks up and got over the gate that way.
This is definitely coaching.
Yes, I'm glad that you mentioned that because there's 100%.
Yeah, there's no way that she came up with this escape plan on her own.
Right. But interestingly, it had recently rained, so there were footprints. But the only footprints in the yard were Alicia's.
Sure. I'm not saying that she had help within the yard, but whoever she was meeting definitely coached her through it.
And that is definitely what Jessica and a lot of people think. You know, Alicia did physically leave the house of her own free will. She left the home. She climbed the fence. She wrote a note. She wasn't like snatched from her bed or anything like that. However, it is important to note once again that Alicia was not the type of child who had like done something like this before, who had done anything like this before. She had never snuck out of her house. She had never run away. She had never done anything approaching any of this.
Right. From a law enforcement standpoint, who cares whether she had?
Well, yes, of course.
I mean, I know they don't think of it that way, but like, regardless of her history with running away, which here there is none, but like, who cares? A runaway is still somebody that's in extreme danger.
Of course. And yes, and you're absolutely right. And I was just, so what I mean though, is that from a mother's perspective, it wasn't.
Oh, it's extra exactly. out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it wasn't a situation of, oh God, she snuck out again. She'll be back just like when she did this the last time. Like there was no last time. She had never done this. Like there was no precedent. She was not a troublemaker. She was not somebody who, you know, who did things like this. And so Jessica immediately knew that like this was bad. There was no like, I'm going to get mad at you. You're going to be grounded. This is like, we are in an emergency. Now let's talk about what Alicia took with her. She took a backpack, but it wasn't filled with things that you would take if you were planning on running away and never coming back. She was wearing her favorite sweatshirt that I had mentioned earlier and like a white denim overall skirt. And she was wearing Vans tennis shoes. She apparently also packed 3 sweaters randomly, but like not necessarily a change of clothes. And again, Jessica's only gathering this based on like what she thinks is missing from Alicia's room.
Yeah.
She took her MacBook Air and her iPhone, but she left her chargers behind.
The chargers.
Yeah. No, that's a big one.
Yeah.
She also took her makeup that her mom had just bought her and that body spray. And she took another item that proved to be quite interesting. A comic book. Now, it doesn't sound like Alicia was particularly into comic books. She did enjoy anime and she was like part of the gamer community, obviously. And while these often overlap, that doesn't necessarily mean that she was like into comic books.
What comic book was it?
Well, 5 months before she went missing, Alicia begged her mother to buy her one specific comic book. It was The Invincible Iron Man number 128, Demon in a Bottle. This particular issue that she had wanted was in good, but you know, not mint condition, I guess, when Jessica found it. But it retailed for $200. Jessica bought it for her, but she never saw Alicia reading it. So she didn't necessarily think much of that because, as we know, kids often ask for things for reasons and then you never see them using it. But Alicia took that comic book with her. Based on knowing her daughter and, again, being close with her and, you know, based on what she did and did not take with her when she left, not to mention the note that said, you know, I ran away. I'm sorry. I promise I'll be back. Jessica believes that her daughter had been groomed online by a predator. She believes that this person told Alicia to leave and meet him and told her what to bring. She also thinks that the comic book could have been a gift to him. And she believes that Alicia 100% intended to return home, but has been unable to. She says that because of Alicia's autism diagnosis and also just, you know, her age, that Alicia is very trusting and doesn't really pick up on social cues very well. But, you know, she also says that she doesn't really like strangers. So this person must have spent a long time gaining her trust in order for Alicia to do something like this.
Here's my thought process on all of this. Obviously, I agree 100%. She has been groomed probably for a while by whoever this is. The items that she took with her, not necessarily the sweaters, but the computer, her phone, the makeup, the body spray, the electronics are there to basically cover up whatever conversations they've had. Chances are that in the grooming process, he probably told her to either create different accounts or something, or only have these conversations on one computer, or somehow isolate it to the MacBook, right? Or on the phone. The makeup and the body spray, that really leads me down a dark path that I don't really want to go right now, because that could mean all kinds of things. The comic book was a ruse. It was designed to get her out there to meet him. It has very little to do with any of this.
What do you mean?
Come and meet me. Why? Why do I want to meet you? Why am I running away with you? Get this comic book. It's valuable. You and I can go and we'll sell it or something like that.
Oh, okay.
It's a way to get her to basically violate her parents' trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the buildup to that, I don't know what that is, because that's probably on her computer or on her phone that she took with her, which is why he wanted those items also. That's why I think the comic book is involved. It's the gimmick to get her to go out there and meet him.
Hmm. See, I thought it was a little more straightforward. I was thinking that, like, whoever this is, she considered him to be her boyfriend. And this was a gift to him. And she was just, you know, meeting up with him and was going to give him the comic book. I do find it interesting, though, that she had gotten the comic book 5 months prior to this. So it makes me wonder if, you know, he lived out of state.
Maybe. To me, that's just part of the buildup.
Mm.
If you're talking about grooming and we're in, again, makeup and body spray, we're talking about potentially sex trade.
Right. Or she's a 14, almost 15-year-old girl who wants to look nice for her online boyfriend.
Yeah, sure. I'm just thinking that, again, my mind is the comic book is the invite or the impetus to get her to go and meet him. And it took some buildup and some time to develop that trust.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do think it did take a lot of buildup, a lot of time to develop the trust. I'm 100% with you on that. I don't know. Like, I'm still more of like, that was just a gift for him. But like, I don't know, because I hadn't thought about it from that perspective either. I really don't. I mean, we don't know.
No, right. But either way, I'm hoping that law enforcement is looking at, believe it or not, comic book stores.
Well, no. And that was like what one thing I read, I don't know if it was like a Reddit or whatever, but somebody was like, hey, you know, this isn't a particularly rare comic, but it's not entirely common either. So it might actually be easier to find the comic book than it would be to find her.
Right. That would be a way to start the tracking.
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he trades it.
Right. So in terms of the investigation, Jessica and her husband called police immediately. Glendale police came out and took a report, but, you know, also said the typical things like runaways usually come back. Jessica couldn't get an Amber Alert because there was no evidence that she had been abducted, but Jessica was able to fight and get a Silver Alert, which is similar, but is usually used for people who are like too old to get an Amber Alert.
Right.
But
yeah.
So, but she was able to get that. And the Glendale police also put out digital billboards on the Loop 101, which is the major highway in the area. And those digital billboards did have Alicia's photo.
So they're willing to go to the extent of doing the digital billboards, but they're still treating this as though she's a runaway and will come back.
Right.
You mentioned that there were footprints that they found.
Mm-hmm.
So where did the footprints go?
The footprints went from her house up to where she had set up the chairs.
Yeah.
You know, to get over the fence. And then they went to the other fence where she had set up the cinder blocks. And, you know, then it was like sidewalk. And so they were gone. Oh, that was the other thing, though. So if you're looking at Alicia's house from the street, right, like you're facing it, Alicia went through the backyard, like on the left side. But the more direct route would have been for her to leave on the right side. But those neighbors had surveillance cameras. So Alicia went on the other side.
Once again, grooming. That's
exactly,
not her.
Exactly.
But it begs the question, are police treating her as a runaway so they're not canvassing the neighborhood?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because that's actually what I'm getting to next. Because when it did come to canvassing the neighborhood and pulling surveillance footage, Jessica says that she had to go out and do that herself.
Yep, that's... It's just because somebody is a runaway does not mean you should investigate less.
Yeah.
Runaways lead to all kinds of things. And finding them, and I say runaways, yeah. I'll use air quotes for quote unquote runaways,
mm-hmm.
but runaways lead to all kinds of potential other issues.
Right.
Sex trade, sex workers, homicide victims. I mean, it's more important for you to treat that as though it was somebody that was abducted and start doing the police work at the ground level super fast. Who cares if you find them in an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Report's done. Case is closed. You find them in an hour, they go back home, whatever. But spend the resources early on and find these people. And then we don't have a podcast.
Then I just spend my time doing my actual job.
You'd find something else to do.
I would. So again, Jessica really was working very hard immediately to get attention onto her daughter's case. And just 4 days after Alicia disappeared from her bedroom, a credible sighting was reported. Several witnesses, including a friend of one of Alicia's siblings who knew Alicia, said that they saw her in nearby La Pradera Park. Now, she was either walking hand in hand with or being pulled along by, depending on the witness account, by a dark-skinned, potentially African-American man with a heavily tattooed neck.
And this witness was found 4 days, you said?
Yeah, the sighting happened 4 days later.
Oh, the sighting happened
yeah,
4 days
Yeah, the sighting later. Happened 4 days later.
When did the witness come forward?
I think that day.
Okay.
Yeah, because by that time, the Silver Alert was out. It was on the news. And again, one of the witnesses knew Alicia, so presumably knew she was missing.
Right, but 4 days later, they see her in a close-by neighborhood.
Yeah, the park is a mile from her house or something.
I mean, that means that she's not far.
Yeah, presumably. Now, as soon as Jessica was told about this, she went to the park, but unfortunately, there are no cameras there. So ultimately, this kind of led nowhere. You know, she was able to find, again, multiple witnesses who saw this.
Right. And I'm sure they gave a direction of travel, but it's a park. So,
yeah. And there are all sorts of people in the park.
Doesn't necessarily lead anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Without cameras, there just wasn't a lot that ended up coming from it. Now, interestingly, around this time, Phoenix area police had been working on something they called Operation Silent Predator. Now, this was a to catch a predator style operation that led to the arrests of 27 men who had attempted to lure undercover police officers posing as children to perform sex acts. One of the men arrested was a 25-year-old named Devontae Jr. Owens, who lived about a half mile from Alicia and fits the general description of the man allegedly seen in the park with her. Another man, 39-year-old Antonio Daniel Holguin, was on the sex offender registry. So he wasn't arrested in this sting, but he was on the sex offender registry and he lived just a few houses down from Alicia. And he also fit the general description.
So are we assuming that the police looked into these people?
Yeah, but I don't have a lot of information on that.
Well, they're not going to release it.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, again, we don't know whatever came of that. I mean, obviously, there haven't been any arrests or anything like that. Alicia's phone and computer were apparently turned off either, before she left the house or right after or whatever, because they were never able to get any pings from it. They were never able to find her location from them. Nothing. They were never turned on. After that night or after that, early morning. So when Alicia hadn't returned after 2 weeks, the FBI did get involved, and apparently they took her gaming computer, which obviously was left behind because it was a desktop, and they went to search that for evidence. So in addition, like I mentioned earlier, that 20-year-old from Oregon, Clark, like he also turned over like his computer and his Xbox and stuff to the FBI as well, so that they could look at the conversations he had had with Alicia from his end and kind of piece things together, you know, in that way. But again, it's not clear whether or not the FBI is still actively looking into this case. Tips have continued to come in after that first sighting, but, you know, nothing has really led anywhere. Alicia's case was further hindered by the COVID pandemic that struck 6 months after her disappearance. I mean, police said that hindered them from, like, interviewing witnesses and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, because nobody knew.
Yeah, exactly.
We were all in our houses not doing anything normal.
Right.
So, I mean, even from a law enforcement perspective, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were just nobody knew. We were all panicking.
But Jessica has never stopped searching. You know, she still obviously has to work and take care of her two other children, but every spare minute she has is devoted to finding Alicia. She started a TikTok, which we'll link in our show notes in the blog, and I was watching them today, and she seems just as shattered as the day she was when she found her daughter's room empty. Now, before we kind of end this episode, I do want to bring a few people on. So I've been wanting to do this episode for a while because I have known about this case, you know, basically since it happened. And I wanted to use it as a cautionary, like, scared straight story, because we have two kids who are, you know, a little bit younger than Alicia, but behave very similarly. They're very much online, very much gamers, very much on Discord, things like that. And so I wanted them to hear about this and then also kind of get their thoughts on it. So we are going to bring on our two kids, our two oldest kids, Cooper and Xander. Okay, so Cooper and Xander have been asking to be on the show since we started it, but Xander doesn't actually listen, so I told him no. Cooper listens sometimes, so, you know, whatever. But the point is that you kids, like, I felt like you needed to hear this story and know. You're still, like, looking at me. You still feel like, oh, this could never happen to me, but, like, it actually could. So you have been in here listening to us record this whole thing and talking to each other, making faces and, like, gesticulating wildly. So what I want to know from you kids is, being online, I have to imagine you don't necessarily know who you're talking to at all times.
I don't really talk a lot to, like, random people. Like, mm-hmm. I have a very enclosed friends group that I've like, there was no way that they could be catfishing because they've sent multiple pictures of them. You know,
there are, like, a lot of pictures on the internet, Xander.
I know, but, like, of one person, they're, like, you know, consistent. It's not, like, weird or anything. And, like, even one of my friends, like, online, I asked, send a picture of Worcestershire sauce, because nobody has a picture of them holding Worcestershire sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they did. How do you catfish that? It's Worcestershire sauce.
Okay. Dad moment here. What other pictures are they sending you?
Face pictures.
No, don't make it weird.
No, I am going to make it weird. I don't know anything about Discord. You become friends via talking about
servers.
Gaming. Mm-hmm. And then at some point you engage
just
in
good friends, and then there's this, like, barrier. It's like your friends still don't really trust each other. You're still kind of friends, but you're not there.
Like, they're on a
exactly. Like, you're not friends with them on a personal level. You're just, like, cool with them. You're like, cool, yeah. I know them. But you would not trust them in any way. Now, I don't speak for everybody, but I speak for myself. That's the precautions that I take.
Do you ask them to take pictures of themselves with Worcestershire sauce?
I take I asked them to take pictures with like random stuff. I asked somebody to take a picture with toothpaste.
Okay, but then to what end? So like after they do that, then what? You're like telling them your address?
No, I trust them on a higher level than just cool. You know, I know him kind of. I don't trust him. But like, I still wouldn't share my personal information with anybody.
When you talk to people on Discord, Cooper, how does that happen? Like, tell me about that.
They either, like, DM me a meme or something. Like, I know one of my friends, he lives in, like, England, Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. Man, just, like, DMs me random memes. But even, like, with that, like, I know his name is Max. Like, my other friend's name is Eli Morgan. But I do not want them to know my first name. Like, no, like, even though it's not too much, I still don't want them to know it.
Okay.
Like, so I just go by my initials. Like, whenever my dad comes around, like, I, since it doesn't, like, have, like, in the, like, a mute switch, I just have to quickly tab out and just, I, like, mute my microphone. That's what I do usually.
Why do you do that when your dad comes around?
Because I don't want him dropping my first name.
Hmm.
So I mute so the he's talking doesn't relay over because, you know, who knows? He might accidentally share some personal stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, sure. So in general, like, tell me about your thoughts on 14, almost 15-year-old girl on Discord, on, you know, other chat thing. Like, it's, again, we don't know everything that she used. Like, we do know she was active on Discord, but that's it. Like, it could have been a million other things. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on what could have potentially happened? Like, do you think that it's reasonable that she could have met somebody online and they could have said, you know, like, let's meet, let's go hang out?
Yeah, what I might think might have happened is that this guy groomed her through private messages. Did they ever exchange pictures?
We have no idea. Because no? I think, if we had pictures, we'd be a lot further along, right? Yeah, well, yeah. You know?
That's my opinion. I think he just, like, gained her trust, as earlier Ethan said. Yeah. I think she might have been pulled into a human trafficking ring, in my opinion.
Now, because you're a boy, do you think that you're immune from this, or do you recognize that this danger affects everybody?
I recognize that this danger affects everyone.
Okay.
You can't be, like, immune to everything. That's why I take extra precautions, and Xander does.
All right, Xander, talking to people online like you do, like, what do you think would have happened? Like, you know, knowing about, like, the makeup and saying she had a boyfriend and, like, all of this, like, what are your thoughts?
Well, kind of coming from somebody who has, like, not bad social anxiety, but, like, low social anxiety.
Sure.
I am always, you know, I always have deodorant, and, you know, if I was a woman, I would probably have makeup too. Mm-hmm. And you know, meeting a boyfriend, that would be kind of scary. Like,
yeah.
Especially for someone who has social anxiety and is on the spectrum.
Right.
And, you know, bad social anxiety, that would be scary. You don't want to go, you don't want anything to go wrong.
Yeah. That's a, you know, that's a really good point. So your thought is she was, like, really nervous. So that's why she's, like, bringing the makeup. She's, like, bringing the body. Like, she wants everything to be, you know, she wants to be able to, like, look good and, you know, put her best self forward or whatever.
And also, I get the three sweatshirts because, like, in the morning I go between like four sweatshirts because I can't decide what looks good. I can see that just like for a later standpoint.
I love that. No, thank you. That's actually very helpful. Now, what I want to know what each of you think about the comic book. Okay, so Xander, since you're on the mic, you go first.
I think the comic book was definitely a ruse. It was kind of like, I think it was a way to get money out of her.
Okay. So, like, you're kind of with your dad. Like, that was your dad's theory.
Like, it was definitely a way to get her over there. It was a reason to get her over there, but it was also a reason to get money. Because, as you said, the comic book costs like $200.
It was like, yeah, it was $200.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
$200 for a comic book just transported over there.
Hmm.
And, you know, for multiple reasons, you know, trust, exchange, you know, here's a present, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
It would make sense that it would, like, it would be something that he wanted out of her.
Yeah. And I think also if you're trying to, you know, manipulate somebody, like getting them to give you what is really an expensive gift is like a good way to like be able to see that your manipulation is working, right? Like if they're going to do that exactly. for you.
If they're going to get you a gift.
Then yeah. Like, that's like that's $200.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially like 5 months before.
Right.
So that he could confirm before he goes there that she completely trusts him.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. All right, Cooper, what are your thoughts on the comic book?
So, yeah, I'm agreeing on them with this one. I think she had her mom buy it for her. They've been talking for like how many months?
So she bought it 5 months before.
5 months ago.
So you've got to assume they've been talking for probably a good amount of time prior to that. Because the $200 comic book isn't something you ask for on day one.
So I think this was a planned thing. It just took a while. I think he said that like, oh, we're going to use his comic book so we can get extra money when you run away because, you know, we need somewhere to live, some food and all that.
Well, you're not going to find somewhere to live on $200.
Well, a hotel.
Yeah. I mean, a hotel for like a night or two, in food. But no, I like, get your... So basically you all are kind of like on the same page that you think that the comic book was kind of like a means for them to get money for something. Okay, but if you think that they were trying to like go away somewhere and get money, that indicates that she was thinking that she was going to be away for a while. Why wouldn't she have taken her chargers with her?
Another thought that crossed my mind is that she might sell those too.
The MacBook and the iPhone?
Yes,
but interesting.
Probably because like maybe he said, hey, you're like, your MacBook and iPhone has got like some suspicious stuff on it. Let me get you a new phone and we can and like a new laptop and we can sell these and have like the memories wiped from it and sell these and I'll get you some new stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's not that he would have replaced it with like a different MacBook and a different iPhone. Maybe you don't need a MacBook. I'll just get you a different phone. They sell the MacBook. He gets her a cheap phone and they still come out financially ahead, right?
Yeah, probably. But yeah, that's what I think about that. Because like if you're going to use it, you're going to want your chargers.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Right. And she did turn them off immediately.
Yeah. So
yeah, maybe she was never planning on using them again.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Do you have any final thoughts?
One of the weirdest things to me is how did she get dropped off at the mall with no backpack and then be seen later with her friends
with a backpack
and a burner phone in the backpack?
No, that is very weird. So the question is Jack mistaken? Was there no backpack? Was there no burner phone? Or is Jessica mistaken?
Well, it could be either way, or it could be that the dude planted it there. He wanted, like, that was the easiest way for her to get that burner phone. So that
you think he planted it at the mall?
Yeah, so that they
could talk on that. And she picked it up while she was there?
Yeah, they could talk on that rather than something that she would have forever.
And that's why she wanted to go to the mall so that she could, which was out of character for her.
Especially because like the biggest thing she has done by then was like, you know, change her outfit and like go to a restaurant, a fancy restaurant or whatnot.
Right. Interesting.
And also, how long has she been gone?
She's been gone since September of 2019. Jeez. So 2.5 years now.
And they haven't found any evidence of a body or...
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Wow.
Maybe she used that burner phone to contact him and let's say where they're going to probably meet.
Yeah.
So she probably threw it away because she doesn't want to tractor her.
Yeah, I don't know. So Jessica has been searching tirelessly for her daughter for 2.5 years, but she's not alone. She has the help of a private investigator and the organization Project 25. Project 25 works to find people who may be victims of sex trafficking. Jessica wants to keep Alicia's story and photo out there because she believes that someone somewhere will recognize her and help her reunite with her daughter. In the meantime, she has this advice for parents. Quote, I do feel that it's very, very necessary for parents to get educated on what their kids are doing on social media and all these new apps to our kids. I myself personally didn't think any dangers since I thought my daughter was safe being at home. I have strangers in my home without them physically being there. For me, my advice to parents is to get educated on what's available out there in social media. Make sure you know your kids' passwords and be constantly talking about the dangers and just monitor their media. Because I definitely believe it's a big, big problem that our youth is facing at the moment. End quote. Alicia Navarro has been missing from Glendale, Arizona since September 15, 2019. She is a Hispanic female with brown hair and brown eyes. She was approximately 4'5" and 89 to 95 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was wearing a white sweatshirt, a white overall denim skirt, and black and white bands. She had braces on her teeth and a scar on her left knuckle. Alicia was 14 when she went missing. She would be 17 today. Anyone with information on Alicia Navarro's disappearance should call the Glendale Police Department at 623-930-3000. You may also call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Dathan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!